From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome to the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for hanging out with us. Matt, what day is it? I forgot what day it was.
Tuesday, March 19th.
Tuesday, March 19th. That's fun. It's a Tuesday. This is really exciting, you guys. I'm really excited for you. I'm excited for me. Tomorrow, they got me pulling double duty, which is pretty fun. I'm going to be hosting the John and Sherry show from 3 to 7, and then this show from 7 to 10. So you're going to get a 7-hour slot of Jake. I'll tell you what, that's just what everybody's asking for. That's what they want. So I hope you guys tune in, and I hope you listen to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, so tune in for that. But tonight, we have a really good show tonight. I'm really excited. I woke up excited for the show today, and maybe it was the sun. Do you guys get the same way, Matt? Do you get the same way in the sun as I do? Excited, I should say. I get very happy in the sun.
I like it when it rains and it's dim and dark. No, yeah, my inner goth loves it.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I love that kind of way. But no, the sun is nice.
Oh my gosh. No, I love the sun. Every time I was talking about my wife about this the other day, it was super sunny, and I think this was our trip over the weekend, our infamous trip now, waiting in the ferry line. But on the way over there, we were just saying to each other, like, well, how amazing is it with this beautiful weather and this time of year when it starts to come around? I actually feel like it's kind of earlier this year than it is in most years because we've already broken 70 degrees, which is great. And I was telling her, like, oh, this is just the best. And she goes, it always makes me question why I choose to live in Washington. Now, we live here because we got family here and we've been here forever and we love it. But you do have that kind of thing where you're just like, you know, there are other parts of the country that it's sunny more than half the year. And we just get like a couple months.
But in a lot of those places, it comes with such heat.
Yeah, I like the heat. I don't mind the heat. I like it. I like it a lot. But it's great. I love the summers here. It's like as we head into the summers here, it's so beautiful. And I think we appreciate summers here more than in other places because for the rest of the year, we do get so much gray weather. But the summers here are gorgeous. They're lots of fun. It's going to be a great year. I just feel like it's going to be a great summer. It's already a great year, but it's going to be a great summer. I'm looking forward to it. I know we got clouds and stuff coming up, and that's going to make people like mad happy. But people like me are looking forward to future sun. That'll be nice. But now we got a lot of stuff to get to, so we're going to get to it.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
I'm 40. Real quick, I just have to say I have never gotten as many compliments about the show as I wouldn't call it a rant, but as my complaining yesterday, my storytelling yesterday, being stuck in the ferry line and having that crazy guy try to merge his U-Haul in next to me. I have had so many people, and the way I can tell if the show is going well is how many people at work come up and compliment the show. And if they don't say anything, then whatever. I just assume they don't listen and they have bad entertainment choices. But if they do listen and then they come in and they compliment, like the engineering guys were like, oh man, stand strong. Good job, like, not breaking the line. I got so many text messages, too. People saying, hold the line. Just, like, don't give up when you're waiting in line. Do not let people merge in front of you. It's bad. Those people are bad. So if you didn't hear that yesterday, people seem to identify something in there about themselves.
They appreciate your courage and taking a stand.
You know, is it courage? Is it heroism? I don't know. These are words that other people use. Again, I'm just a man.
You're too modest to use those words.
Yeah, I'm too modest to use those words. I'll let other people call me a hero. But if you want to listen to that, check it out on the podcast. Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. You can hear that. Like, just download the podcast. It's the most recent hour loaded, I think. I talked about it both at the start of the 7 p.m. hour and also the start of the 9 p.m. hour. So check that out. All right. Before we get into the news, before we get to some stuff we want to talk about, every single night I play a trivia clip and you guys have an opportunity to guess which movie this is from. You can guess that on the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line 888-973-5476. We often get people who ask us when we have confirmed that their guess is correct, what have I won? The answer to that is nothing. You win my respect. That should be enough. But if you don't know what this movie is, you can also listen at the start of the next hour, at the start of the news roundup, and we will just tell you what the movie is that we're talking. And we'll probably talk a little bit about it. These are all movies that I love. These are movies deeply ingrained in my head that I can quote word for word. You probably can't too. So a lot of them seem like low-hanging fruit. Tonight, though, I will say tonight's is a little bit tougher. I don't think a lot of you are going to get this one. And it's a little more obscure. I have taken a lot of heat from a lot of you because I picked some movies that people say are too easy. and you guys think that I'm just like softballing it. Is that what you say? Softballing or slowballing? Lowballing?
Lowballing.
Lowballing?
Yeah, I think.
You think I'm low-hanging fruits or something, but I'm not. These are tough. These are designed to be difficult because I want to trip that mechanism in your brain that says I'm working hard at something that makes you feel good. I'm just my whole job here every single day from 7 to 10 is to make you feel good. That's what I'm trying to do. So this clip, again, a little bit of warning. It's kind of obscure. A lot of you probably aren't going to get it, but you know, I wish you luck and tune in to the top of the news roundup, and I'll tell you about this obscure, tiny movie that few people have heard of.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No, I am your father. Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
No! No!
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Good luck on that one, folks. All right, let's get to it, Matt. I like to start off with good news stuff. I like to start off with stuff that's upbeat, makes you feel good. This is not one of those stories.
All right, everyone, gird your loins.
Listen to this headline at mynorthwest.com. Gas prices up again in our state. This article you can find at mynorthwest.com. It details how much we're paying for gas right now. It's not fun. I'm feeling it. You guys feeling it at the pump? All right, listen to this. This is mynorthwest.com. It looks like gasflation is back. The average price for gasoline in our state is $4.33 a gallon. That's 43 cents higher than it was a month ago. That's 9 cents higher than it was a year ago. I mean, the 43 cents a month ago is probably a better one. According to the American Automobile Association, the average gas price in King County is $4.54 a gallon. So in our state is $4.33. In King County, it's $4.54. That makes total sense. Everything's more expensive in King County. In Snohomish, it's $4.40. In Pierce and Thurston counties, it is $4.38 a gallon. Let's see. They talked to somebody from the AAA, which is, again, the American Automobile Association. They says, this time of year, we normally see pump prices start to rise. And while prices have been rather pokey so far, they should begin to accelerate and move higher very soon. That's not great news. That's not fun. According to the American Petroleum Institute, gas prices are affected by a number of factors. I don't know if you guys know all this, but some information for you. Global supply shortages, workforce constraints, geopolitical instability in Eastern Europe, where people get a lot of fuel, a lot of oil. Here in our state, we also have additional things which make our gas expensive. We have high gas taxes, really high gas taxes. In our state, we have 50 cents per gallon added on to every single gallon that you buy. That means every time that I fill up my tank, which is 25 gallons, $12.50 is going straight into, I'm not going to say it's Jay Inslee's pocket. I mean, like, can we really blame him for everything?
Blame it on the governor, and they can blame me. I get all kinds of letters.
It's all kinds of letters. I don't know if it's totally his fault, but he's certainly not helping the situation. We'll get to that in just a second. But yeah, every time I fill up my tank, it's like I'm giving them 13 bucks. That's no fun. Let's see here. Gas prices are going to keep going up. This is according to the president of the LIPO Oil Associates. This is going to cost the consumer more money. In the Seattle, Bellevue, Everett area, the average price of gas is around, again, $4.50 a gallon. The cheapest price of gas in our state is at the Angel of the Wind Fuel, which is $3.59. That's fantastic. That's much closer to the national average. This is according to GasBuddy.com. The national average right now is, let's see here, the average in the United States is $3.48 a gallon. So that's fantastic. It's almost a dollar cheaper at the Angel of the Wind Fuel. But in our state, of course, it's nowhere near the national average. We're paying $4.33 on average in King County. You're paying $4.54 just over the border in Idaho. You know what they're paying in Idaho around all those potatoes? $3.43 a gallon, which is painful. Every time we do a story like this, I hate it because I have to hear how much they're paying for gas in other states, which drives me crazy because I know we don't have to be paying this much for gas. A lot of this is political. A ton of it is political. And I don't care if you vote for Democrat or Republican. Vote for whoever's going to make gas cheaper for me. Jay Inslee was asked about this because when they were, pumping the Climate Commitment Act, which is kind of his baby, they were saying, hey, this is going to affect the cost of a lot of stuff in our state. It's going to affect the cost of energy. It's going to affect the cost of almost everything because you're forcing these big companies to buy these carbon credits on this market that you guys are creating just for this purpose. Isn't that going to eventually work its way down to the consumers? Isn't that going to trickle down and everybody's going to have to pay more? Jay Inslee was asked about that, and he said, no. Are you kidding? That's not how things work. That's not how business works. I don't know if Jay Inslee's ever run a business. But he says, no, it's not going to get to the consumer. It's going to be almost nothing. And if it gets to you, it's just going to be pennies. We've played this clip a million times, but it's worth repeating.
This is going to have minimal impact, if any, pennies. We're talking about pennies, potentially. Not all of this would be passed off to the consumers, and what they would be pennies.
So we're going to see some gas prices continue to climb, especially as we get closer to the summertime. It's always more expensive in the summer, but I just hope, this is my wish and my prayer. I'm sending this out there. I'm praying. I'm saying, God, please. But I'm also praying so that you guys can hear me, which is why I'm saying it to a live microphone, to a massive audience. When we are making our decision in our state for who we want to lead our state, please factor in how much I'm paying for gas. Because maybe, just maybe, maybe my prayer will be answered. And I won't have to pay so much for gas next go around. But I don't know. That might just be pie in the sky thinking. And maybe it's gas is always going to be expensive. I don't know how it all works. But I'm praying that someday we have the same gas price as the rest of the country. Is that too much to ask? I don't think it is. All right. Let's move on, Matt. This story is really interesting to me. And I would be interested to see what you guys think about this. Again, you can hit us up on the text line, Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476. So in Washington State, we just mentioned this yesterday a little bit, but we no longer in our state are going to be requiring future lawyers to pass the bar exam. Now, the bar exam is not easy to pass. In fact, it's really, really hard.
How did you cheat on the bar exam in Louisiana?
I didn't cheat. I studied for 2 weeks and I passed.
Studied for 2 weeks and he passed. That, of course, is Leo DiCaprio in a very good movie called Catch Me If You Can. He's depicting a guy named Frank Abagnale, who actually, as it turns out, this is a quick side note, I saw a story about Frank Abagnale that says that, you know, because he's famously in that movie, he plays a con man who flies with Pan Am Airways, does all these different things. As it turns out, a lot of those stories, surprise, surprise, may have been made up. So they're like, they made a Steven Spielberg movie out of it. They had this, you know, like it's Tom Hanks, Leo DiCaprio, Steven Spielberg. You don't get any bigger than that in Hollywood. And apparently a lot of these stories may not be actually be true, which is really fascinating. But it was a great movie, so I highly recommend it. Back to the bar exam, Washington State. Under the court's new changes, Washington will create, in place of the bar exam, in place of law students having to take the bar, in place of it, they're going to say that they're going to create three experiential learning alternatives in place of the bar. Law school graduates can do a six-month apprenticeship under the guidance and supervision of a qualified attorney, as well as take three more standardized courses. Also, students still in law school must complete 12 qualifying skill credits and do 500 hours of work as a licensed legal intern. They must then submit a portfolio of this work to waive the bar exam. Law clerks who are not attending law school must also complete 500 hours of work as a licensed legal intern, as well as meet certain benchmarks and complete standardized educational materials. In addition to this, the state is also lowering the minimum score to pass the bar from 270, which it is currently, down to 266, a lower threshold previously adopted during the pandemic. I guess they assume that during the pandemic, people didn't have enough time to study for it, although I think people had extra time, I thought, during the pandemic. Those who do take the bar, the rigorous test, will take a new updated bar exam that addresses many of the identified flaws in the current bar exam by focusing on real-world skills and practice, and that will go into effect in 2026. The court is calling for assessments and programs to help lawyers remain competent throughout their careers, not just when they're licensed. So that's good. You want lawyers to keep up to date on everything, just like you want doctors and surgeons to adopt new ways of surgery so that they're not still sticking leeches on people. That makes total sense. One thing that this made me think of, though, I was wondering, and this is just a question for you guys. Let's say that you are going to be investing some money. And I think in our state, we actually require that they have certain law, certain Series 7 tests and things like that that people have to get if you are a financial advisor and you want to advertise your services and say that I will help you be a good steward of your money to somebody. And so that person gives you the money and then you have to go invest it for them. You have to actually pass certain things. Like if you're a CPA, you have to get certain credentials to be a CPA. If you are a financial planner, one of the things you'll often see on the bottom of financial planners' names is you will see a thing that says CFP certificate, which I believe is a certified financial planner certificate. It just means that they've passed the various tests that they need to pass. So they know they're giving you comfort in you knowing that they know what they're doing with your money. And I don't know how true that always is, but they at least have standardized things that they have to pass. So I'm wondering, because the bar exam will still be available, because people can still take it, are there going to be then like different classes of lawyers where you start going like, well, okay, I have to make a law decision. I have to hire a lawyer. Maybe it's for a will. Maybe it's to defend me in a dispute with my neighbors. Maybe my neighbors are suing me because they think that my yard is so beautiful that they're suing me for it. When I'm looking for an attorney, are there going to be little delineations now on whatever attorney's website that says, oh, by the way, I actually passed the bar exam? Do you think that that's something that people would do, Matt?
I would think so. So you'll have your tiers of lawyers. You'll have the top tier, and then you'll have Saul Goodman over here.
Yeah. And you know, better call Saul. Yeah. I understand why people use him. They're in a pinch. They've got to use him. He's a good price. But if you have the ability to hire a lawyer who not only has gotten all the different certifications they're required to get, but traditionally they've passed the bar exam, which is traditionally the entry point for all attorneys. I mean, if I'm just being completely honest with you guys, and I have friends who are lawyers, and they've had to take the bar, they've told me how rigorous the studying is and how tough it is. I understand that everybody comes from a different background, but we require everybody to take the same driving test when you get a car, when you get a license, because we want to make sure that people are in good hands and that we're going to be responsible drivers. So if somebody's, if I'm sitting there staring at two attorneys, all things being equal, I'm going to pick the one that has passed the bar exam, I think. Why wouldn't I? It just gives me a little extra comfort. It shows me that they've maybe done the extra hard thing. We've admitted now in Washington State, we say, hey, this is really tough. And some people, according to Washington State, some people just shouldn't be asked to pass this. Or there should be alternative, these experiential learning alternatives to taking the bar exam. But I probably would go with the person that passed the bar exam, if I'm being completely honest. All right, but you might think differently, and that's fine. We can still be friends. We have a lot of stuff coming up on the show tonight. We have a great show. I'm so excited to bring it to you. Matt, what do we got coming up?
Coming up on tonight's edition of Cairo Nights. Remember that pay up ordinance here in Seattle? Well, we'll take a look at the data a few months in and see if it's working out. A super awkward interview between Don Lemon and Elon Musk. We'll find out more about that, too. And Lisa Brooks will join us at 8:06 for the News Roundup, everyone's favorite feature right here on Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. Somebody was texting. You guys are guessing really well on that trivia clip. I don't know how you guys cracked that code. It's a very obscure film. I don't know how you knew it. I will tell you the answer to that trivia clip at the start of the next hour for those of you who just can't guess it. Somebody just texted in when I was telling everyone that I'm going to be hosting the John and Sherry show on Wednesday and Thursday, which means that there's going to be a 7-hour block of Jake. And John texted in. He said, 7 hours of Jake, better buy more beer. I don't know if that's a compliment or if that's an insult.
Yeah, it could be read either way, right?
I actually feel like it's a compliment.
Yeah.
I like beer
take
too.
It that
so
way.
Yeah, I'm taking it as a compliment. I take everything as a compliment. Even when people are mean on the text line, which they're not often mean, but even when they try to be mean, it just honestly, we become friends because I will then be texting back with you. I want to know what you're thinking. Like, that's the cool thing about this. Like, I view the text line as real life. I don't see you as just a faceless person. I kind of like, I fill it out. And I do, yeah, thank you, John. I fill it out and I do a little work to try to make you into a real human. And then you and I can have a back and forth. And it's nice and it's real. And so I don't mind when you guys have disagreements. I think that's totally fine. Mostly you don't because we're really common sense here. Everything we say is pretty much right almost all the time. And there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is I'm 40 years old now.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
All right, I want to get into some audio here that I'm going to play. I was going to save this for later, but it's really interesting, and so I want to play it for you right now. Don Lemon. You guys know who Don Lemon is? Don Lemon used to be on CNN. He was on CNN for like 17 years. And when Don Lemon was on CNN, he got caught up in a discussion with his two co-hosts, who were both women, and they were talking about Nikki Haley. So you have Don Lemon, a man, telling two women that Nikki Haley is past her prime. And I don't know how old Nikki Haley is. I think she's in her 50s. She might be in her late 40s. She's not an old person, clearly, like, not an old person. But Nikki Haley, part of her early presidential career, I'm sorry, presidential candidate career, she's no longer a candidate. She suspended her campaign. But when she was running, she was talking about how, hey, we have all these old politicians. We have all these people like Joe Biden is 81 years old. Donald Trump, he's 77 years old. If either of these guys are elected, both of these guys are the oldest people to ever run for the office of the White House, eclipsing only themselves, who previously set that record when they ran 4 years ago. Back in 2020. So Nikki Haley was saying during one of these interviews or one of these campaign speeches or a bunch of these, she was saying, listen, like maybe we need to discuss an age limit when people are maybe some of these older politicians are no longer in their prime. And then Don Lemon said, well, that she's not in her prime. And again, she's like a youngish woman. So it was kind of a off-putting statement. CNN and Don Lemon shortly after parted ways. I'll just play you a quick bit of that clip here. And then I'll get into why I'm talking about Don Lemon. He has this interview he just did with Elon Musk, super awkward, really, really contentious, really awkward for us, so because we weren't there, it's funny. And so we can play it and laugh at it. But this was Don Lemon. This was, I guess, part of the reason that he and CNN are no longer working together.
She said 75 and up, so that would include Trump.
Yeah. Elder statesman here.
This whole talk about age makes me uncomfortable. I think it's the wrong road to go down. She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s. I don't necessarily.
40s. Oh, I got another.
I'm not saying
decade.
I agree with that. So I think
he's not saying he agrees with that, and it's according to Google. And Google must be right about everything. All right. So I happen to think women are in their prime because I know that I have a lot of audience members who are over 40, and a woman, and women, I should say. I think you guys are in your prime. You can be in your prime at any age. Any age, you can be at your prime. Anything under 75, you're in your prime. Anything over 75, prime-ish, I would say. All right, that's a joke, obviously. You're in your prime forever. In prime until you're no longer with us, but you're in your prime forever. All right, have I covered my bases sufficiently so I won't be fired? All right, so Don Lemon, he and CNN parted ways. Elon Musk, who owns X, formerly known as Twitter, has a pretty good business. And so he reaches out to some of these folks who have parted ways with big, you know, major media companies. Like when Tucker Carlson left Fox News, when they had their parting, Tucker Carlson set up shop at X. And he partnered with X, and now he hosts a show on X, and he gets millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people watching his show. And it's a great way to get his show out there. And it's a great, you know, a very profitable thing for them. They can make a lot of money on X. So Elon Musk extended that same invitation over to Don Lemon. Don Lemon then said, all right, I'm going to do the Don Lemon show on X. His first guest, Elon Musk. Shortly after they have their interview, which is an hour and 6 minutes, Elon Musk releases a statement basically saying, Don Lemon releases a statement saying, Elon Musk has canceled the partnership I had with X, which they announced as part of their public commitment to amplify more diverse voices on their platform. He informed me of his decision hours after an interview I conducted with him on Friday. This is a week ago. The interview was just released, but they did it like a week ago. That interview will remain the premiere episode of the Don Lemon Show on Monday, March 18th. So we have audio from that now. So I'm going to play you some of that in just a second. Elon Musk then responded to Lemon's post, and Musk said basically that Lemon's approach was basically just CNN, but on social media, which doesn't work. These are Musk's words. As evidenced by the fact that CNN is dying. And instead of it being the real Don Lemon, it was really just former CNN president Jeff Zucker talking through Don, so it lacked authenticity. All this said, Lemon / Zucker are, of course, welcome to build their viewership on this platform along with everyone else. He went on to say, Lemon is welcome to monetize on this platform. Just like everybody else, what we are going to do is what we aren't going to do is guarantee minimum payments to him, as he was demanding, which would be going beyond everyone else. Unfortunately, all Lemon wants to do is rehash the dying CNN business model, but on social media, which will do even worse here than it did on cable news. So, with all of that as prelude, I now have clips from the interview. And let me tell you what, it was awkward, pretty contentious. It's an hour and 6 minutes long. Very uncomfortable. Don Lemon asked Elon Musk, who recently met with former President Donald Trump. He said, listen, are you going to give money to either one of these candidates? Was Trump asking you for money? Elon Musk said no.
You said you're not going to donate to any candidate.
That's correct.
Why not?
I think, while I'll voice my opinion, I think I don't want to put a thumb on the scale monetarily that is significant.
Are you going to loan him money to help pay his bills?
No.
Not at all. Pay his legal bills.
I'm not paying his legal bills in any way, shape, or form.
And he did not ask you for money.
And he did not ask me for money.
And Trump's got a lot of legal bills right now. So he could probably use the cash. I don't know that, but I would want some money if I had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in bonds. All right. So he was then also asked if he will endorse anyone. Is he going to endorse Biden? Is he going to endorse Trump? Would he endorse RFK Jr.? He actually wasn't even asked. But he was asked, are you going to endorse either of these two candidates?
So you're not going to endorse a candidate?
I may in the final stretch endorse a candidate, but I don't know yet. I want to make a considered decision before the election. And if I do decide to endorse a candidate, then I will explain exactly why.
Are you leaning towards anyone?
No.
You're not leaning towards anyone? Because you've been...
I'm leaning away from Biden.
You're leaning...
I've made no secret of that.
I love his laugh. It's like, it's a funny laugh, but it borders just on supervillain. There's just something about it that I like. And I like Elon Musk. I know a lot of people don't like Elon Musk, but I actually like him. I think he's a very interesting guy. I mean, he's oftentimes, I don't know who's the current richest man in the world, but Elon Musk is always up in the top three, depending on whose stock is doing what or who has cashed out what. But he's one of the richest guys on the planet. So I find it fascinating that he chooses to buy something like X, formerly Twitter. And this is interesting, too. He was asked, why doesn't he care what the media thinks of him? And I thought his answer was actually really good.
Do you think if you moderated yourself more, if there was better content moderation on the platform, that you wouldn't have to answer these questions from reporters about the great replacement theory as it relates to
Democrats? I don't have to answer these questions.
The great replacement theory as it relates to Jewish people. Do you think that?
I don't have to answer questions from reporters. Don, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked for it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would not do this interview.
So you don't think, do you think that you wouldn't get in trouble or you wouldn't be criticized for these things?
I'm criticized constantly. I could care less.
You don't care?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I don't think people should care what the media thinks about them. They're terrible judges of character.
Even someone who has one of the biggest social media and biggest information platforms in the world, you don't care? You don't think that you have any X.com or you have any responsibility to the truth or moderating the platform?
You're conflating the truth with the media, and I think the media is not truthful.
We have more cuts from that. We'll play some more cuts of that later. It is a fascinating interview. And I agree with him there on that statement where he says, I don't think that you should care what the media thinks about you. I want to go back to a time when the media's job was to inform you about what was going on in the world, not try to tell you how to think. That's weird. It crossed over into a very weird place. And I think Elon Musk kind of represents some folks who just want to say, hey, you know what? I don't want the media telling me how to think. And I don't care what they think about me. I think that's a smart way to think about it. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Next, we've had a little bit of time now to look at that Seattle pay up ordinance. Do you guys remember that one? It was mandating $26-something an hour for drivers of like Uber Eats and DoorDash, gig workers in Seattle. We now have the data. How is it going? Was it a good decision? Is it a good ordinance? Is it a bad ordinance? Hint, it's not a good ordinance. We're going to get into that coming up next. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. Hope you guys are having a great night. All right, We're going to try to cover this really fast. We only have a couple minutes before we get to the end of the hour, but don't worry. We got two more hours of this, so don't go anywhere. All right, Seattle had a pay-up ordinance. I'm going to just like run through this really quick, and then we're going to get to the information I found fascinating. Seattle had something called the pay-up ordinance. It was adopted by the Seattle City Council in 2022. It was passed, and it actually went into effect in January of 2024. And what this was doing, it was mandating a minimum floor for app-based food delivery drivers in the city of Seattle. So just a little bit of info for you. In the city of Seattle, the minimum wage is, I believe, $19.97 an hour, just shy of 20 bucks. But this was mandating that they were going to be paid a little more than 26 bucks an hour. And the way that they did that is they had this really kind of crazy math calculation. Listen to how they figured out this wage floor. They said the engaged minutes for drivers are multiplied by a minimum wage equivalent rate, which is then multiplied again by an associated cost factor and then multiplied again by an associated time factor. This sum is then added to the total of engaged miles of drivers, multiplied by the standard mileage rate, and then multiplied once more by the associated mileage rate. If that sounds confusing to you, I feel like maybe it's designed to be confusing. The bottom line is you have a city who stepped in and said, hey, we're going to take something that's kind of working right now, which is that you have a thriving app-based delivery service where customers are able to get their food, so they're happy. Small mom-and-pop businesses are able to make more sales, so they're happy. And then you have another party who's the person delivering those two, the middleman, the app-based drivers, who are able to work at their leisure. They can work as much or as little as they want. They can have other jobs. They can make money on the side. They call these jobs side hustles. This was a perfect side hustle for a lot of folks. And then the Seattle City Council stepped in and said, hey, you know what? We're going to try to fix something that ain't broken. Because they wanted to say, this is my opinion, but it's actually right. They wanted to be able to say that we have the highest paid gig workers anywhere in the country. The problem was when they created this artificial number and they forced other companies to start paying their drivers, the city did not employ these people. The city was saying, hey, private businesses, you guys have to start paying people this amount of money. And so those businesses said, you know, like DoorDash and like Uber Eats, they said, well, we can just tack on a service fee. We're not going to make less money. The customer's going to have to eat that cost, as they always do. That's the way business works. At least it has since I've been looking into it. So this pay-up ordinance starts, and within a couple of weeks, it's a disaster. Listen to this. Listen to how quickly it turned into a disaster. There was $26 coffees, $32 sandwiches, 35 Wingstop orders. This literally will be taught in economic classes, is my guess. I think people are actually going to look back in this and be like, hey, this is where when government gets involved in things, even if the intentions are good, and I'm going to give the Seattle City Council the benefit of the doubt, just assume that their intentions were good. Even if they have good intentions, it doesn't mean that they're right. DoorDash said that they had 30,000, think about that in a city like Seattle, it's not a giant city, 30,000 fewer orders within the first 2 weeks of the ordinance being passed. And then you had drivers who were trying to, you know, make side money doing this, make extra money, and they were saying, hey, business literally overnight dried up.
Sundays before the ordinance, we'd be thinking breakfast.
Fewer orders.
You know, people, they love their breakfast. Sunday today, I don't even touch it. They're not going to order. And it's definitely backfiring.
So it's backfiring. That's one of the drivers. King 5 talked to a bunch of these drivers. Another driver they talked to was saying that, hey, you know what? Like, yes, wouldn't it be nice if we were making 26 bucks an hour? But that's assuming that we're working the entire hour. And that's assuming that we're just slammed with orders. But because all these fees went into this and all these companies said, well, we're not just going to pass this on to the customer, then the drivers weren't getting all these orders. And now they're not going to just sit around and wait for one delivery for every couple of hours. They can't make any money doing that.
Assuming that you are working constantly, then yes, you're going to be making that much money. But that's not what's happening right now because people are not ordering as much anymore.
So here's the surprising part to me, and I know I got to get out of here. A spokesperson for the mayor noted, they said that should the data show that there have been unintended impacts for workers and small businesses, we're always open to making improvements. They also said, but we strongly support this ordinance. Seattle City Council President said she's very worried about what's happening right now, but I'm not going to redo the whole legislation. Our leaders should be learning from these things. And if you're adopting bad policy, get rid of that policy. And if they're not going to get rid of that policy, get new leaders. All right, we got a lot more coming up. We got the news roundup next. Stick around for that. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.